Welcome back to the Munich Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is Pierce Bauer.
What's up?
And Sean Riley.
Back, baby.
Back. Two in less than a week. It's impressive.
I'm a dedicated member of the Mediocre Movie Club.
Here at the Mediocre Movie Club, we're a group of friends who every month select three movies, often on a theme, not always on a theme. It was on a theme in this case. And on our website, MunichMovie.club, we post reviews of those movies, and then we get together on our podcast to discuss them. This last month, we discussed 2022 releases, and the three movies we picked were The Batman, and Prey, and Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Par for the course for us as far as being all over the place. We're going to start with Batman. It's been mentioned before that we lost a Batman podcast that I think, who was that, me and you, Pierce? And then I think JR was in on that one, too?
Yes, but all, truly, John, all these podcasts blend together. So,
That's fine. It vanished from the internet. It vanished from your brain. It truly never happened. But in this thing, in this, I want to say, hour and a half long conversation that we had about various Batmen, the primary chunk of that conversation was about The Dark Knight. And I would say that this new Batman is a clear descendant of Christopher Nolan's 2008 movie. And let's dig into this new version and see how it measures up. Because I think that's the main measure of whether or not this movie is successful or not. Riley, what did you think about The Batman?
I usually think that I'm on the pulse of, like, pop culture or whatever. I follow what people say are good and bad and whatnot. So I usually have an understanding. I was shocked. Nobody told me that this version of the Batman was really good. It way exceeded my expectations. I got it probably A-.
Pierce, the Batman.
I saw this in theaters when it came out, and I would say there are aspects of it that I like. Especially in kind of the style and those choices, especially from the directing. Ultimately, I probably found it unnecessary. Like, I don't think I needed another Batman movie. Again, in our lost podcast to history, I love The Dark Knight. It's one of my favorites. So, I wasn't really asking for more Batman. But I think this is okay. Ultimately, from when I saw it in theaters, I'll say kind of forgettable. Like, I really have not thought much about it since that weekend. So over some time, I probably have it somewhere at like a C+, B-.
This was the first movie I saw in theaters with an RPX ticket, not RPX, 4DX, which is an absurd experience where the chair moves. And there's all kinds of extra effects, like little puffs of air whenever someone gets punched in the face or a gun goes off. There's like fog in the theater. It was 100% ridiculous. My back hurt afterwards, but it didn't detract from what I thought was a really great movie. Like in that Lost Batman podcast, I just think that movie's mess, like an incoherent mess without much to say about. As much as it wants to have something to say, it doesn't really have anything to say. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this one was a lot more coherent. I thought it was surprisingly relevant for the time that it came out. And on top of a movie that really looked like a movie. It pulled a lot of influences from movies that I have a lot of appreciation for, a lot of eras that I have a lot of appreciation for, and I felt like it had a real auteur working behind it in Matt Reeves, who made Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Rise of the Planet, no, not Rise, War for the Planet of the Apes, and also a really underrated horror movie remake called Let Me In from 2010 that I think is great, one of the better horror movies from the last 10 years. Comparing to previous Batmans, again, specifically The Dark Knight, because the tone of this one is so dark and I think informed by The Dark Knight. The villain performance is quite clearly modeled after Heath Ledger and the Joker. Pierce, I have a sense of what you're going to say in comparison to this, and you kind of mentioned it already, but how heavy of a presence is that movie while you're watching this movie?
Well, I agree with you that, like, I think the best thing about this movie, I guess, is that it's, like you're saying, like, it has a, like, point of view as far as, like, the filmmaking goes, right? Like, I think in comparison to the rest of the, like, superhero movie spectrum, like, I mean, like, Marvel movies are the, like, complete opposite in a way where they're just, like, void of any, you know, artistic, like, originality or anything like that, right? So, like, I did like that, but I think, frankly, I think the influence, like you were saying, is so much more on movie, like, Fincher movies or, you know, stuff like that, far more than I felt like it was, like, a Christopher Nolan influence. But you are right, also, that the Paul Dano performance is certainly, like, trying to do that Ledger kind of unnerving, you know, method kind of role. Which has become, like, pretty popular, I guess, throughout, like, Batman movies and whatnot. I thought, like, all that was okay. I just, for me, it's more of the runtime and the plot that just really, by the end, lost me. But, like you're saying, I agree. Like, the point of view and the cinematography and the directing, all, like, a step above the run-of-the-mill Marvel or frankly, any other DC movie, which is, like, even below the rest of them. So yeah, I like those aspects of it.
Yeah, Paul Dano, who plays the Riddler, he gave like an annoying interview about how he had a hard time shaking this character. that's ridiculous. I feel like people who play Jared Leto, of course, has to spit his bullshit about the same stuff whenever he takes any role. Like, it was just he's such an involved actor. It's so hard for him to get rid of these characters that he so fully inhabits. But, like, a little perspective, people. I mean, I as much as I appreciated this movie and what it was about and how it was about it, it is still a Batman movie. Just perspective from these method actors.
Did Paul Dano have similar difficulties in shaking a Farty Boater Pants movie?
I mean, you would think so. Riley, how significant of a presence was, like as you were watching this movie, are you thinking about, like, I like this and other Batman movies better?
I mean, like, tonally, yeah, you guys are right. I mean, it is certainly more Christopher Nolan than Joel Schumacher.
Yeah.
There's kind of a different spectrum. I'm proud of myself for pulling Joel Schumacher out of my ass on the spot there. Yeah, I kind of get what Pierce is saying too, that there is more Fincher and, you know, what you have in your notes, the 70s thrillers and stuff, than necessarily just the Chris Nolan stuff even. It's darker. The one drawback is it kind of felt like I was watching the Game of Thrones last season.
Mm-hmm.
During aspects of it. You know, what's the point in special effects and cinematography and everything if you can't see what's on the screen? But I also didn't watch it in 40X, which I do have questions about how much that ticket costs, because it sounds like it's an awful lot, like the Bugs Life experience at Disney World. I've done that a couple times.
Evan, you know, honestly, Evansville could conceivably have a 40X screening. It was so stupid. It was such a stupid experience, but it was like after the car chase scene, which I think is pretty great as far as car chase scenes go. Just like the whole place was just like buzzing once it finally ended. It
pumped some carbon monoxide into the theater for that. You know, just like
yeah, just a
comment as they zoom on the tailpipe.
Just to calm everybody down and knock some people out, because again, we're watching a movie and we're not on a roller coaster. But like that was just the feeling of it. Like it wasn't a good. It wasn't like a Christopher Nolan. This is how the movie was meant to be watched kind of experience. I can't imagine like pro cinema directors are gonna be like, in heavy collaboration with 4DX people who are like trying to map out when exactly the chair should lurch forward and like almost dump the viewer onto the floor. But I would kind of recommend anybody do it. It was a lot of fun. And then I did, once this movie came to HBO, I did watch it again just to get the non jostling experience. And that was fun too. To jump back to inspirations, Reeves is doing, he's in very much like I called him an auteur earlier, but he's quite clearly heavily inspired by lots of other, he's not necessarily bringing his own sensibility as much as he is distilling it through decades of like cinematic influences, like a lot of Zodiac, a lot of Seven, I wrote a lot about Chinatown in my review at MuticaMovie.club. He's talked about 70s paranoid thrillers, your 3 Days at the Condors, your Klutz, and specifically with Robert Pattinson. Either of you guys have seen the movie Last Days, a Gus Van Sant movie about an imagined last days of Kurt Cobain, where he just is this like greasy grunge guy wandering around his mansion before ultimately killing himself. And like there's the Nirvana influence, or there's the Nirvana song that keeps coming up on the soundtrack. Once I read, after I heard that interview, it's practically a direct ripoff. But all that being said, it's just nice to have these big budget movies that do have any kind of perspective at all. As you said, Pierce, just this movie has like a visual sense. It has a visual frame of mind. It's seen movies before, as opposed to just a lot of CGI clop. And that is a low bar, but in 2022, it just automatically boosts it, I think.
Yeah. It's like one of my favorite like pastimes is like director bullshitting on like the press tour.
Yeah.
Saying this movie was influenced by, and then they'll just list like the most ridiculous classic films, and then you go watch it, it's like Avengers Endgame, you know. Yeah. It's like the Russo brothers are like the kings of it, but mm-hmm. With this one, like, I agree, it definitely has those influences. I do feel like it's just like, it's like 90% Seven, you know, like it's mostly Seven, and then like some Zodiac and some of those 70s thrillers, and there's definitely the Cobain stuff, but like overwhelmingly this movie is doing Seven in Gotham, right? But like at least it actually does it, you know, like all these other movies there's nothing, you know, whereas this one at least the influence is on screen. So I liked that, but I definitely in retrospect I'm like it was, you know, everything down to the rainy, you know, puddles in the asphalt kind of look of the town was like exactly the way Fincher, you know, whatever fictional city or wherever Seven is set, it's got that exact same tone and feel to it. But mm-hmm. But again, I liked, you know, it's better than nothing, you know.
Yeah,
I think anytime it was just Batman and Catwoman on screen, it felt a lot like Sin City.
Oh yeah, yeah, I could definitely see that too. And then there's a lot, and there's like the noir voiceover that Bruce Wayne is giving, which again, more compliment. I feel like that was just like the exact right amount, especially for who this character is, which is a dumbass. Like this is a phase in Batman's career where he's pretty bad at his job. I think maybe my favorite thing in this movie is the way that he just totally peels out when he jumps off the building. Like that's such a centerpiece Batman thing to do, and then for him to so badly screw it up, like this is not a funny movie in any way, shape, or form. But that's as close to a joke I think as this movie has, is watching this guy who's supposedly this bulletproof ninja totally bite it. And again, like the chair in the theater gave a nice little jerk when that happened. We mentioned the 3-hour runtime. it's a long movie, no question. Once it passes like the 2 hour mark, it does absolutely start to feel long. What do you guys think you would cut out of this movie to like tighten it up a little bit?
I feel like you're like, it's not just that it's a long movie, but the plot feels long. Like it drags as far as the plot goes. And for me, like, I felt like there's an entire like extra finale, right? Like, I frankly, everything in that stadium with the flood, you know, and we'll talk about the shooters, I guess, like all of that felt so over the top for me, both as like in a movie that was already long, adding on this kind of like what I felt like was a second kind of crescendo or climax. And then also like it just went against the kind of like street level plot or tone that the movie was going for. Like what I liked about this movie's approach was that it was not like all of Gotham is in peril. You know, it was a murder mystery with like a serial killer. But then all of that kind of gets thrown aside when it becomes like a flash flood is going to destroy Gotham, you know? So I remember specifically in the theater, checking my watch, so to speak, around that point. And also just like that plot point just didn't, that climax didn't work for me, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little more. Just at a certain point, you start to notice how long individual, like, parts of scenes are taking.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, the one that stood out for me on the rewatch was, we can talk about the riddles and how those take up a chunk of time, too, but the one where there's a bat in a cage and the envelope is is taped to the top of the cage. Batman is just putting his hand in there as slowly as possible. It's like an entire minute that's going by. And just, I feel like you could cut like 20 minutes out of the movie by just having people move at a normal speed. Riley, did anything jump out to you as far as like enough of this?
I mean, I don't think I was thinking of it that way at the time. I do know that, I mean, most movies I watch tend to be after everybody else in the house is in bed. So I'm old, so it gets late, and I did split this one up when I hit the pause button just to see how much time was left and said, shit, I got an hour and a half to go. So I don't like splitting movies, but I had to. Couldn't do it. But yeah, Pierce is absolutely right on the second climax. It's the realism of a serial killer just makes for a better movie than turning him into a supervillain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead and talk about the ending. Like, the big pivotal moment when Batman is, like, cutting a wire, the movie is treating it like the crux of the movie. It's this big, like, fulfillment of an arc. But there's something wrong in the geography or the timing of that scene where it comes off as pretty silly. Like, am I off base there? There's a long way to go to lead up to that too, and Pierce, you mentioned how it is shifting the stakes of the entire film as well. But just like that moment when he's cutting like the electrical wire, I just thought that was just something feels off about that scene.
Yeah, it all felt. I just don't think it like served the film's like strengths. Like again, like what the film did well was the kind of like. Again, the Seven ripoff kind of style and the serial killer drama I thought was good building up. I feel like all of that build up, like the whole plot building up to the reveal of Paul Dano. I don't know about y'all like watching it, but like for me in the theater, like I knew it was going to be Paul Dano as the Riddler that was going to be the reveal, right? Like it's kind of strange to me in retrospect how long the movie spends building up to, you know, him getting, you know, pursued and like captured in the diner, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was like in the trailer. That then it felt like the rest of the movie just kind of fell off a cliff in a way, just because it was like all this building up and then it led, and like you're saying, like, and then it led to this like weird, somewhat incoherent kind of, the stakes were all messed up. Like that, I don't know, it just like none of it. For a movie that long and somewhat momentous as like a Batman movie, like I left the theater not loving it, you know? And I think that's probably part of why.
Thematically, I think it works really well because, like, there's the very early moment in The Dark Knight when Batman is encountering the guys who think they are also Batman. And that's not really what that movie is about. It kind of tangentially is, but it's a very small thing. And the way that this movie flips it to where it's this, like, murderous terrorist goon who is inhabiting the role of the Dark Knight guy in hockey pads, where he thinks he's Batman. And Batman, like, encountering these people, I think that scene needs to happen, and I think he does need to... Like, the scene with the court is him transitioning from a figure of vengeance to, like, someone who rescues people. So all that like, works thematically, but just, as far as the climax of a three-hour movie, there's already been so many of them that I think it might just be one too many. Like, that is... Even on a rewatch, it was just even more so, just not a satisfying ending to a movie that up to that point I was really involved in.
The idea of a rewatch of this movie to me feels exhausting. Like, I don't think I could, even though there are parts I like about this movie, just the length of it and the, again, like, what it builds up to kind of being to me like a letdown. Like, I just wouldn't, I can't really think of a situation where I would choose to watch this anytime soon again, which, you know, if we're going to measure it on this metric, like, I'll watch The Dark Knight tonight, you know, for the 12,000th time, you know, like, in some ways I do just kind of want a blockbuster movie like this to be rewatchable, I guess, you know.
If we were putting, like, the action side by side,
I like the Christopher Nolan action. You know, like, I don't think it's that bad.
I thought the action in The Dark Knight, especially the opening sequence, was, and I remember seeing that opening sequence the first time when it was kind of released before the movie as, like, a teaser. But I thought that stuff was great, and you could see everything on screen in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the more and more they changed Batman's fighting style into, you know, I'm not the ultimate warrior, and, like, kind of show him getting his ass kicked every once in a while. That's always appreciated.
I think I prefer the action in this one as opposed to The Dark Knight. Like, again, The Dark Knight has the Heath Ledger performance, and that, you know, puts it at least equal to this movie, if not superior. But the hand-to-hand stuff, I think, is really great in this version. It's really visceral. It's coherent, and that car chase is really great. Like, this is something that Matt Reeves figured out in Let Me In, which also has, like, that's not an action movie, but, like, the big there's a big action beat where you're inside a car as it's, like, flipping down a hill. And that's, like, a very striking part of that movie. And, like, he's doing more of that in The Batman at a much, much greater scale. I mean, it's no trailer flipping over, but, you know, what can be.
No, the car chase is absolutely the peak of the movie. Like, that's, like, yes, that scene is phenomenal. And, like, especially in a theater, like, I didn't do the 4K experience or whatever, but sure. Or the 4D, but the... No, that seems excellent. And that, I guess, is a good, like, I guess I should be fair. Like, yes, this movie cribs a lot from, like, Seven, but that scene is, like, straight up, like, Bullet or French Connection or whatever, you know, whatever else. Like,
yeah. Really,
And
just so much appreciation for, I don't know how they film this movie. I haven't watched all the making ofs or if those even exist, but it all feels real and physical and coherent. In a way that I'm just getting further and further away from, as far as what can I expect in movies.
Even in world building, in terms of, you know, the Penguin and other characters that, you know, are, you know, part of the Batman franchise, and, you know, what could be to come if they stick to it. those are real people too. It's not, you know, I like the Burton Batman movies too, but you know, it's not Danny DeVito's Penguin.
Yeah, Colin Farrell's probably not gonna bite someone's nose off, or like dribble a bunch of black who knows what out of his mouth while he's leering over some poor woman. With Paul Dano as the Riddler, how much is too much for you guys? Is he like, does he cross over into absurdity? He does for me. What did you think of him, Riley?
I don't know. Like, I mean, he's a psychopath. I mean, you got to give. I mean, yeah, I just congratulated Penguin for being a real person and like a crime boss. But you know, this character is you know, belongs in Arkham, you know, the asylum, and could use some medication. I'm okay with somebody who's off the rails when they're supposed to be off the rails.
Pierce?
I think it, like, it's kind of maybe what the flaw of this movie is which is also what, again, in some ways it's what I like about the movie, which is what we were talking about, which is like its grittiness and its realness. But like on some level, like, I don't know, I didn't fully enjoy my like superhero movie villain being just like a psychotic person, you know, like in such a real way. Like, I do kind of want some of the like cartoonish kind of facade that we need in like movies. And his performance, especially in that like interrogation scene, right? Like, I thought his performance was just like, it was good, but like not, I don't know, maybe not what I wanted out of a Batman movie. But I think the movie does use him sparingly, right? Like, he's not really on screen that much.
No.
But it's just, I don't know, I thought it was fine. But my bigger issue really was more of that, like, I just thought that the character itself, like, the actual, like, not necessarily the riddles themselves, but, like, the entire scheme, I just, like, wasn't too engaged with. Like, by the time it all unfolds, I was kind of like, like, what was the plan? Like, what was the plot here? Like, what was he... Like, I didn't think that was the most, like, well-executed part of the movie. So, like, his performance, I think, is fine, but a little over the top, sure. Or just, like, a little too, I don't know, like, a little too real, in a way. Whereas, like, again, like, the Heath Ledger Joker, which is, like, the high watermark, but, like, that's able to have, like, a seriousness to it, and like a prestige to the performance, but also still be kind of like cartoonish and like movie, you know, like a movie character, you know, not as much like a, what if an actual, like, you know, the perfect example is that I think it's either the opening scene or like one of the opening scenes where he murders the person with like the hammer or whatever it is. And the like ghoulish scream that he lets out, you know, is just like so real in a way that it was like disturbing. And I guess that's not totally what I'm looking for in this type of movie. But I get that that's what he was going for. And I understand people liked that to a degree, that this was kind of a, like a shift in that perspective. Like a normal Batman movie or a Marvel movie or whatever has like no realness in that sense. And he like really went for it. So, like, I didn't love that as much, but it still was used pretty sparingly for me.
I think that's a good mention in that I loved those just little, like, exertive noises that he's making while he's murdering people. But then once you get to the interrogation scene and his volume is, like, all over the place, that's when it gets too much for me. And that's what you're left with. You're left with like another version of the Joker who is, you know, teased for the inevitable sequel to this movie, played by like an actor I love. So I'll give it a shot. I have faith that Barry Keoghan will figure it out. But who knows?
I'm definitely happy that it's like an actor like Paul Dano. Like, I think he's a great, like, interesting casting for this type of role. You know, like, he really hasn't done many movies in the last however many years, and I like him as like an actor, but I thought like that was more interesting than like, I don't know, whatever like typical Hollywood, like, I don't know, handsome leading man type of guy, you know, like I thought he at least was like an interesting casting choice.
Yeah. To go back to something you said about his plan, I thought his plan was great, with the exception of like the flood and his henchmen, you know, that's not as good. Like him and Batman have this like philosophical back and forth, like how do you make this city better? Where in Batman's view, it's you beat up thugs. And in Joker's view, it's you start at the top and you just clean house with all these corrupt pieces of shit. It's like a Black Panther-esque, boy, the villain's kind of got a really good point here, and which is not something you ever get out of a Batman movie. Like, you're not on Bane's, you're not like Bane's making a good point about blowing Gotham City up. That's just never the way it works in these kind of movies. Or yeah, Penguin should be mayor, to go back to Batman Returns. But as far as like these bought out politicians who have totally looted the city and left people like Riddler at, you know, to be eaten up by rats in orphanages, yeah, fuck them. And like that's the end. We talked about this in the previous Batman podcast, where like that movie has no sense of broader corruption. It's Alfred's speech about some guys just want to watch the world burn. It doesn't even occur to him that like somebody in Burma might not want English people showing up because they don't want English people showing up in their country. Like that's why he's burning the forest down. That movie just has not to rehash this whole thing, but like that movie just has a lack of imagination, where I think this movie has a pretty solid imagination about what it would be like to live in this deeply corrupt city that people kind of have no hope for, up until the point where they're blowing up flood walls. I'm just like, yeah, this guy's got a good plan. And like in 2022, when you get when there is so much like anti-elitist thought in the air, it's nice when a comic book movie, a blockbuster comic movie, can like just have anything at all to say. And that, for me, just for my money, that bumps this movie up into a like a level that transcends just like superhero movies in general. Anything else on the Batman before we move on?
I'd say I thought the casting across the board was pretty good, right? Like I think Colin Farrell in the fat suit, you know, like that worked surprisingly. I thought Zoe Saldana was like really great as Catwoman, and I liked Robert Pattinson as well. Like I thought their scenes together, I thought really worked. I think her character, like I didn't really care for like most of the stuff that happened with like John Turturro and her, like. Didn't need most of that, but I thought casting
the town stuff that I pulled out for my review.
Yeah, just I just didn't like
character at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah, it's just like a weird, like, again, for a movie that's quite long, like, I guess I could throw that into the like, didn't need that much of it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of strange how much Turturro kind of ends up being in the movie, but. I thought like there's the scene early on where like Catwoman's, I can't remember anymore, but like she's sneaking into some, I guess the crime scene and Batman is there as well. And they have to like, you know, like hide and like he like grabs her, you know, like I thought all of that worked. I thought that worked really well. And so I liked that. And frankly, it's the type of thing where like I would want to, I guess, see more of this Batman's world with this cast of characters. Even though I didn't leave this movie loving it, I think I would still watch more if there was another Batman movie with Matt Reeves and this cast. Like, I think I'd be into it.
Yeah, which I don't know about timelines, but there will inevitably be another one of these. Unless Warner Brothers just completely loses its mind and sells the license. which seems possible. Whatever gets our Property Brothers on TV, like, yes, that's an important thing.
Yes, that's, I was gonna say, they were gonna, they'll film the whole movie and then they'll tank it so that they can, you know, merge with the TLC or whatever, whatever Food Network.
So maybe it's just the third movie that the Scott twins can, you know, rebuild Wayne Manor.
Yeah, a supersized episode. That'll be, that's the future of movies.
And then, and Love It or List It. Different show, but it still works.
Is it a different show? I mean, they've kind of just figured out the right formula, it seems like. And that's what HBO Max is going to be now. Anyways, The Batman. Much better than it needed to be. And good for everybody involved. Great score. We didn't mention the score. Like, Batman themes just seem to work.
Did you like the Nirvana needle drop? Did you like? I liked it. I thought it was maybe overused, but I did think it worked, and like was a weird perspective on like, this is now what classic rock was to, you know, 20 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, it would have been like Creedence or some shit. I got Basky on the brain. Our next movie is Prey, a new entry into the Predator franchise, directed by Dan Trachtenberg, released directly onto Hulu. Skip theaters altogether because the world is terrible. What did you think of Prey, Riley?
Once again, I mean, I would have watched this movie even if it was terrible because Predator's in my wheelhouse. But exceeded expectations. Again, it was good.
Pierce, Prey.
Yeah, I think that's like that's the way I would frame it. It's like it exceeded expectations. Like, I didn't think it was great necessarily. I loved the original Predator. But I thought it for a movie that went straight to streaming, it was probably one of those watches I've had this year. So I liked it.
Yeah, I'm with Riley in like, this isn't the Xenomorph in Aliens level, but I would say it's in the next tier down as far as movie creatures go. The Predators, I'll watch the Predator or anything. I've seen both Alien versus Predator movies, including the one where there's a merged Predator and Alien and it barfs its eggs into pregnant women. Somehow a fun movie. Alien versus Predator Requiem. And like Pierce, you mentioned the original Predator, like that's a very silly movie in the same way that like Top Gun is a very silly movie. Ooh. If this movie is missing anything, it's a level of poking fun at itself that it just doesn't at all. But I don't think that makes it worse necessarily. It just means it's missing something that is like a key part of this franchise. But like as a straightforward action movie, the metric is always, can this action choreography at a certain point, at any point, make me like sit up and exclaim or just involuntarily make me react? And there were multiple instances in this movie where that happened, where I'm just sitting on my couch and then all of a sudden I just find myself yelling. When that bear got punched in the face, I was very, very impressed. this is one of the rare franchise entries where there's just no connection to any other of the, how many movies? Four? Five movies in the franchise, not counting Alien versus Predator. The Predator is around in a different part of history. This is the key to getting Predator movies, I think, for the remainder of our lives, if not longer. You just plop a Predator down in any historical setting. Off the top of you guys, I mean, I'm cheating. I have thought about this. But what historical setting? Like, where does the next Predator movie need to take place in?
In feudal Japan's obvious.
That was high on my list.
I think it'd be interesting to also have him pop into maybe some of history's wars. Like, you know, what if the Predator happens upon some World War I foxholes? You know, like, what could they do with that kind of shot?
Nice. Pierce, any are you working out your historical muscles as far as where the Predator is most appropriate?
Yeah, I thought about this as well. I think, like, the one of the more treacherous terrains for anyone, I would like to see the Predator. Mid-2000s, the Predator is a corrupt Boston cop being investigated by internal affairs. I think that would be, that's the Predator I want.
Sure, he's got to use his head a little more than his camouflage technology.
Yeah, he's posing as a Costigan or something. You know, it would go along those lines. You know,
The Departed.
Yeah. Something like that. There's something there.
I don't know. My go-to is Roman times. There was a period during Augustus's reign where Rome reached as far as it possibly could into Germany. And the line was the point at which a legion just kind of disappeared in the Teutonburg forest. And what if a Predator was responsible for that? I think that's a solid. Once the feudal Japan one gets made, because I think that is 100%, that 100% must happen. But then, yeah, Teutonburg forest versus Predator.
Vikings would be good too if you could, you know, work a way to. I mean, you might be going high budget to get the Predator out on the ocean. You know, maybe risk some Waterworld fails, but I could go with some Viking Predator too.
Yes, coming off strong from the Northmen's,
yeah,
moderate success commercially, at least. Anyways, that movie is a fucking banger. But yeah, this is such a great idea. This is just such a great idea.
What works so well for this one is that it's one, like, not the obvious choice. Like, this is not what you would think. Like, if if you gave the whole spectrum of history, the whole timeline, and you said put the Predator anywhere, you wouldn't think of, like, Native American, you know, West, but it works. And then two, it's like, it's got the smart thing about it, about the, like, the Predator is this, like, ultimate technological hunter, and then these, you know, its adversaries in this setting are, like, void of the technology but still equipped with the skills, you know, and, like, that conceit really worked for me. So it'd be like coming up with something similar to that, you know, not just like sheer strength or, like, you know, like, that's why, like, feudal Japan I think would work, because it's, again, it's like skill and craft versus, like, technology.
Yeah, and, like, this Predator is dumbed down. They didn't figure out lasers, apparently, on a Predator planet for another couple. Interstellar travel, sure. Lasers, they're going to need a few more hundred years. I don't know if that's a further evening of the scales, necessarily, or just someone thought in the making of this movie about Predator science trees. But,
I mean, his darts were you know, homing. So
yes, yeah.
They did track,
and, you know, great payoff. There's only like three or four characters in this movie, and that depends on whether or not you count the dog. Does that keep things focused, or does it make the world too small? Did you guys want more, like, tribal dynamics, or is everything exactly the right amount in this very tight movie?
No, I liked that. I honestly, going into it, I hadn't watched, like, a trailer or anything. I knew the conceit, like, I knew the setting, but I thought it was going to be far. Like, I was expecting a movie with, like, no dialogue. Like, I thought it really was going to be that minimal, as far as, like, this one, you know, person is out in the woods or out in the, you know, wherever, the plains or whatever, and it's just them versus Predator. So I was shocked. I liked the, like, brother sister. You know, I thought that worked. But I didn't need more of a plot. Like, I liked the void of that, like, traditional plot, you know, mechanic. Like, I liked the minimalism.
Well, it also gave us the French trappers to root against, you know, just enough to, you know, they're clearly shit, and I'm glad their Predator can destroy them. You know, just throw us a bone there so that he's not just destroying the, you know, the nobles.
Mm-hmm. And there's really just the one French asshole I appreciated that they weren't just automatically... well, no, I kind of take that back. Just like the shorthand in any of these movies is like, are you just leaving the buffalo carcasses? Like this was like Dances with Wolves shorthand too. That's like the greatest sin possible. So, okay, yeah. The French are not great and kind of suck in this movie. But it does also take the tiny bit of time to like allow for... some of them are not complete assholes.
Right. Degrees of them.
Yes, there are degrees. Yeah, there's the guy who was just savagely murdered by the main character. Gets his like leg cut off as for bait. And the converse side of that, too, is that the Indians, or the Comanche, are not all super cool either. Just the way that this movie could have gone wrong, action or no, is if it does... This is just such a huge pet peeve of mine. If it does like a noble savagery stuff where like these guys are just better and they figured out how to live and it's all been downhill since we decided collectively that this wasn't going to be the way that civilization is organized. It's like, no, they're just people like everybody else. And some of them are assholes and some of them are cool. And they've figured out how to, you know, adapt to their scenario. To their environment as better, as good as anybody else, and they're just people. I just have so much respect for a movie that resists this patronizing pat on the head bullshit. And like the treatment of their like herbalism and their medicine, that's where it so often goes wrong, where they're like they've like figured out some kind of energy medicine that isn't real as far as any measurable outcome is concerned, but whatever. Here it's just they found a plant that lowers body temperature. Totally fine. It's all herbal and it's not mystical, which is again total bridge too far for me.
A lot of things where if you take too much it's poison. If you take just enough, it's a painkiller.
Exactly. That's all fine. That's all perfectly fine. A lot of the anthropological books I've read, like the level of respect for like a tribal society is in its extremely hard won knowledge about what plant does what. Like they had to figure it out. Somebody had to sample a bunch of plants in different volumes and different preparations until they figured out what worked and what didn't. And that's as scientific as anything else. And it's just a perfectly respectable way to imagine human progress in any setting. And here, like, human progress is, okay, fine, to the purpose of fighting off aliens. But it's just a totally respectful way to depict, like, a native tribe for this white guy's money. There's not too terribly much in Prey to really talk about. It is just such a straightforward action movie. But we can turn it over to an episode of The Chris Farley Show and just call out fucking badass moments in this movie that, as I was saying earlier, just like make you sit up and take notice. I already mentioned like the bear getting punched in the face, which again, fantastic.
Bear punch was rad. I agree. I liked one thing it did different where there's like the sequence where they're like in the tall grass and you get the like predator, like it first locks on. It's like, what do you call it? Like it's, lasers or whatever, like on the brother, but then like I like that it kind of took him out of the, like I feel like, or at least my association with Predator is from the original, which is the jungle, and then the Predators, the what's his name,
Danny Glover.
No, these are the like, I guess not the most recent of the reboots, but the other one where they're on the planet, like the
Yeah.
Oh, the Adrian.
Is that one Predator? That one's, yes. Predators. And then there's a Predator, is that right?
Predators, I think, with an S.
No. And then Predator was the most
Predator recent. Was the one with the guy who was in the original that directed it, right?
Yeah. That one.
I thought like my common association with the Predator is like that jungle setting or the tree, you know, hidden in the trees. And mm-hmm. So I liked that like took him out of, you know, the like I like the way they switched it up at some parts. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. The other big visceral action moment is this, like, medium shot of the brother, like, jumping off of his horse and running his spear through the predator. Just, like, this incredible, piece of stunt choreography.
You could totally envision the storyboard that said, this is what we want this shot to look like. And
yeah,
then they pulled it off exactly.
Yeah, that looked absolutely fantastic. Kudos to all involved. And, like, the Predator, like, it's a real guy. I've seen, like, little snippets of the non-CGI face. I'm sure they CGI'd it a little bit in moments. It looked pretty wet in certain instances. And maybe that was the difference. But, the snippets I saw, like, the mask, it looked great. I feel like they didn't even need to do the CGI, but... who knows? You got to pay these giant studios. Anything else on Prey? It's just a really strong action movie.
Well, just, you know, practical effects you don't see too much anymore.
Yeah. I'd also say that the weird story around the movie is that it was not a theatrical release, that it went straight to Hulu, which is really not known for doing that as much. And I do kind of wonder, like, I kind of do wish this movie was in theaters because I thought it was a quality movie. And frankly, there's not, like, I think when this movie came out, there really wasn't much to go see in a theater anyway. So, like, why not? But then on the other side of me, like, I do think, like, I probably wouldn't have gone to see this in a theater if it was in a theater. And I did just watch it, like, on my couch on, like, a lazy Sunday. So, like, it's in this weird between space that is, like, very telling for maybe where, like, movies are at in 2022.
Yeah, this year, August turned into September. like, you usually get several fairly big releases in your average August, but after Bullet Train came out the first weekend, it's really been pretty dead. Like, the biggest release might be Top Gun.
No, like truly, do you know what was top of the box office this past weekend?
I don't.
It was the Dragon Ball Z movie that was released.
Okay. good for Dragon Ball Z.
But it's like, you know, like could Prey have not come out this past weekend and done somewhat decent numbers and then been on Hulu a month later? Like,
yeah, I think this
question the kind of numbers it could have done, though. Like, the last handful haven't been great. It doesn't have, you know, a tentpole star, like, you know, Arnold's not in it. Like it exceeded all of our expectations. None of us expected it to be good, you know? Like, how many people were clamoring for another Predator?
I mean, now all three of us in perpetuity.
Yeah.
It as maybe long as they do this again.
Yeah, it maybe could have had, like, a word of mouth thing, but it you're right, which is, like, again, like, I don't think I would have gone to see it had it been in a theater, but I just wish that maybe that the movies that are in theaters would be this quality, because they frankly aren't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure some of this is, this is Disney parent company, and they've been doing, they're just relegating more and more of their catalog to straight to Disney Plus or straight to Hulu or what. And I mean, it's just going to continue. All the best Pixar movies recently have been straight to Disney Plus, and this falls into that same basket.
Well, so, the Weird Al movie's a Roku original.
I very much want to see the Weird Al movie, and I don't really have any sense of how I'm going to do that.
I also saw, like, the Pinocchio movie is going straight to... Like, it's just, like, you're telling me that couldn't have put up numbers? Like, I guess I don't get it.
They're all just cutting...
Talk it over with, you know, there's got to be an algorithm that says what percentage has to be driving those premium subscriptions to stay relevant. So they have to put out new content there versus just sticking to the vault.
And I mean, like, we're seeing this with like all the Warner Brothers stuff, where the production budget is one thing, and then you have to pay, you know, the rule is kind of is like an equal amount to bring it into theaters and to advertise it. And now that all these studios more or less have their own streaming service, like, you can just not spend all that money and dump it onto your streaming service and then vanish it at a certain point in the future and not have to pay any like residuals or, and you're just done. You're just done with that movie now. I don't understand how they make money in this scenario. That just kind of all relies on subscription fees. But I don't know. I pay for like two of the six or seven subscription fees I have. But then maybe that's coming to an end as well. That seems like the next shoe to drop. It's a terrible media environment, at least for movies. TV is still pretty great, strangely enough.
Well, and with all that, how awful does something have to be for the studio to just make it disappear like the Batgirl?
Yeah, that is a mystery. Somebody saw that. Somebody saw that recently. I am curious if it was just unwatchable. But then it would be even more depressing if it was just like a perfectly fine movie that they just didn't see a path for. Yeah, it's all very depressing. Speaking of depressing, our final movie is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Too harsh? Maybe? Who knows? This is a straight-to-Disney Plus release, speaking of. And Chip and Dale are back, as everybody demanded. I gave this movie a C+, so despite my tone, it did make me laugh in a few places. Pierce, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers?
Yeah, I watched it before it was even assigned for the podcast. It made me laugh, but I can't say my attention was kept for the entirety of the movie. You know, kids movies in general are tough for me. I don't really watch many of them. I do think this movie above anything else is like a real triumph of like intellectual property, and I'm the you know, the best part of this movie really is the shock at what properties they are able to kind of play with and ultimately like mock. So I thought that was impressive. But like as a movie, like, you know, it was a little chaotic for my adult brain.
What spurred you to just throw Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers on, if not the whole of the Mediocre Movie Club?
Especially being young.
It had like good word of mouth and was kind of being like noted as like, this movie is actually funny for being like a kid's movie. Like that was kind of the rap that it had gotten. And I will say, like, it is clever. Like, I think it is above average, you know, like whatever the dumb kids, whatever, like it's better than I'm sure like Minions or whatever the fuck. I don't know. But like it certainly is clever and making fun. It's got that Roger Rabbit, you know, that's the common comparison. But like it's got that sense of humor in a way. I just again an entire movie of this like kid energy, like kid movie energy. Like I couldn't keep up with.
Riley, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. What'd you think?
So this movie was probably made directly for my exact demographic. I watched Chip and Dale as a kid. I watched, you know, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, and Darkwing Duck were always on. Like I was the target audience in those age groups, like that third, fourth grade type. I'm the perfect age for this to now have kids that are that age now. I remember thinking it was funny while I was watching it. And then I remember 2 days later not remembering a single thing that happened in the movie.
Did your encyclopedic knowledge of Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, did that serve you at all? Did you like...
I knew the characters.
Background characters and I have no doubt inside jokes that I also watched this cartoon I didn't catch any of the references.
So I remember Monty in his thing for cheese, and I remember Zipper loved Gadget, but I couldn't tell you if there was a lot of callbacks because I don't remember what happened in the movie.
I don't remember the cross species love affair from the series, but I'll take your word for it.
See, I didn't remember Gadget, you know, reciprocating that love. Sure. I just remembered the fly be completely
just low always sniffing around this mouse.
Yeah,
mouse, right? Who gives a fuck? Pierce, you mentioned triumph of intellectual property. We're seeing more and more of these movies: Ready Player One, Space Jam 2. I just hate it. I hate the premise. I hate the idea that this movie is like, or any movie, is just pulling and pulling from whatever the studio has. That's just like the triumph of Family Guy humor. I just reject it out of hand. I hated Ready Player One. I'm never going to watch Space Jam 2, but I'm sure it would make my head explode. And I feel like this is about as good as it could possibly be done. Again, I gave this movie C+, and I'm talking about it like it's a war crime.
Well, you're right that, like, I agree with you that those examples of what you gave are, like, that's the death of culture, absolutely. And, like, even more so, like, I think the worst, what I think about often is how, like, I don't know, like, the Marvel movies or any superhero movie or franchise movie, just, like, having a character show up, which is, like, you know, only because they now have the rights to that character. Like, I don't know if you saw, like, footage of, like Comic-Con where people were screaming because, like, Daredevil is back or whatever, you know? And it's just, like, now what constitutes, like, story in our movies or our TV shows is just, like, again, like, do we have the rights to this character? Yeah, like, that's all it is, and it's just sad and stupid. You know, we make a movie with three Spider-Men in it just because they got the rights to do it. It just is stupid. But, mm-hmm. like, this movie, I feel like, is at least kind of mocking some of that stuff of, like you were saying, like, the Space Jam or the Ready Player One. Like, stuff like that, I guess this is at least mocking in some way, where I don't know if it's a spoiler or whatever, but, like, the Sonic the Hedgehog reveal is, like, I still don't understand how they were able to do that. Like, that's, I just don't know who would allow on the, who makes Sonic, Sony or somebody? Whoever owns the rights to Sonic, I don't know how you let them do that, but I thought that was remarkable.
That was pretty funny, and voiced by Tim Robinson. Like, that's the greatest asset of this movie, is they got vastly overqualified people in the voice cast, and Kiva Schaefer is the director, he being one third of Lonely Island, and Andy Samberg another third, voicing Dale. Like, the laughs in this movie come from, like, their delivery. Andy Samberg's delivery, John Mulaney as Chip's delivery, the fact of Ugly Sonic, Will Arnett as Sweet Pete, like, adult, gross Peter Pan. It was the voice delivery that made me laugh more than anything. And as far as the writing, I don't have the writers in front of me. But I'll give them credit for, like, being able to suss out what makes this kind of movie terrible and either leaning into it or subverting that a little bit. Like, any rap scene will generally send me screaming from the room. Like, I tried to watch M. Night Shyamalan's comeback movie, The Visit, the movie that he made when he was at his lowest point, and, like, kind of brought him back to semi-respectability. But, like, the kid character is this, like, 13-year-old boy who fancies himself a rapper, and he is white, and every other scene in the first 5 minutes, first 10 minutes, is him rapping to some guy on the train to show off his skills. And that was the end of that movie for me. I did not watch the rest of it. Intolerable. But here, even them calling out, this is going to be terrible, those choices are terrible, any kind of, and like Space Jam 2, like Porky Pig raps apparently in that movie. So, I mean, they're cognizant of terrible culture. And like that is one of the better scenes in the movie somehow, because it's funny people coming up with it. It's Andy Samberg potentially improvising this whole whale rap that he does. So like that's as good as this is gonna get. But they're doing this as opposed to like making another pop star, which I think is just the most depressing thing about the whole affair.
So you're saying you don't appreciate the movie where any movie where the genre is the Steve Rogers meme? I understood that reference.
Not a fan, no. Or like the Rick Dalton leaning forward. It's, I mean, I've seen, yes, fine, great. I watch TV, I watch movies. Sometimes I recognize references. I don't need to be, again, this is like the patting on the head type stuff from Prey that movie thankfully avoided. Like, I don't need to be patted on the head. My head doesn't need pats. Just make a pseudo original story. And I'll accept that. Kiki Layne, she was the co-star of If Beale Street Could Talk from 2018. I thought she sucked in that movie, and I thought she was just the fucking worst in Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Am I alone in thinking that?
I didn't think she was bad in If Beale Street Could Talk. I like that movie a lot, actually.
But, sort of. I just think she was kind of like a charisma black hole compared to the people that were surrounding her.
Yeah.
She was very passive in that movie in a way that I don't think the character was necessarily written as. But yeah, here I thought,
yeah,
I can't imagine what it must be like to be an actor in these movies where you're just talking to nobody. There's no actors in the room for you to bounce off of. I don't think she has a scene with another human in this movie, but still, I mean, if that's the job, that's the job you got to do. You have to like pretend at least that, you know, you're a person with emotion. And I just thought she was really terrible.
Do we have any examples of well-done performances of a human actor surrounded by nothing but cartoons?
Brad Pitt in Cool World. No, I don't know.
I didn't like that movie.
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, even Roger Rabbit, like, that wasn't.
I mean, oh,
yeah, Bob Hoskins.
Bob Hoskins, that's it. Yeah.
That's probably the good example, right? Like, he's good in that movie. But I don't know any others.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Yeah, people have been doing this form of acting long enough to where, you know, somebody should have figured it out by now. And she's, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how bad she was. I mean, I'm really being harsh. Again, C+. But, yeah, just stood out. Anything else on Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers? Prey in this movie. They don't necessarily give us, you know, the most to talk about compared to Batman. But, yeah, I mean, I laughed more than I thought I would. And I thought I was not going to laugh at all. So, congratulations.
It certainly fits in the category of, like, kids movie that adults can laugh at. You know, like, that's, and I think if you're a parent, like, that's what you want, you know, like, I think the Lego movie and what else? Pixar movies and all these, other, you know, like Mitchell's vs. Machines we did last year. Like all of those fall into this category of like, it's better. It's not mindless, you know, it's got something to it more than your average, you know, Minions, Angry Birds, whatever. I don't know what kids watch.
Yeah. The new Minions, Rise of Gru is terrible. it was really bad. I like Despicable Me. I even was okay with the first Minions, but like the as as a universe, the Gru universe, the Minion universe, more misses than hits.
Did your teenage son dress up in a suit with his buddies and go see it?
No, he wouldn't do something silly like that. He went with me and Mindy and Kellen. Kellen thought it was hilarious.
Sure.
Kellen is a big proponent of fart humor, which, mm-hmm. He's a 9-year-old boy. Of course he's a proponent of fart humor. But there's a lot of just audible farts in the movie. It's right from the beginning. So, he was locked in.
Okay. Missing from Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, a healthy amount of toilet humor. Maybe that, again, is just how it ascends to a respectable level. If it's even where it's at, I don't know. I just feel so conflicted about this movie. Terrible trend, possibly as good as that terrible trend could be executed. That's it for this month at the Munich Movie Club. Our next theme, and potentially our next several themes, we might do this for a few months, in honor of the once a decade Sight and Sound list, which will be released in November, and which I am extremely excited about, very anxious about. I just want to see what gets in, what gets out, what the new number one movie of all time is. For a little background, the Sight and Sound list is, so Sight and Sound is a British magazine, and they send out polls to critics all over the world with what are the 10 best movies of all time, and then they compile a list of 250, depending on all those responses, and they do a top 100 directors poll as well. And
they're going to put Francis Ha in it just to piss me off.
I mean, it's always, there's going to be like 3 or 4 movies that get added from the last 10 years. That's just how it always goes. It's a very like stodgy, heavily foreign influenced list generally, but still, it's like a cinephile's mark it on your calendar once a decade kind of thing. And we have top 10 lists here at the Media Community Club. They're on one of our tabs on our website. So we're going to, for this next month and probably the next 2 or 3 months until the list gets released and my anxiety gets satisfied, we're going to pick some of our favorite movies. And the first three that we picked for this next month, based on all of our various top 10 lists, we're going to talk about The Big Lebowski, we're going to talk about Team America World Police, and we're going to talk about Menace to Society. We're going to get a chance to talk about some A-plus movies. By the time this has been released, I'll have written a review of The Big Lebowski. Big Lebowski, who'd have thought, still great, still hilarious, every line a goddamn gem. And in the meantime, you can read reviews of these last three movies and many, many more at MuticaMovie.club. You can like us on Facebook at Mutica Movie Club and Twitter at Mutica Movical. And that'll do us for this month. We're also doing every other week recaps of House of the Dragon. We put out an episode about the premiere. And we'll be doing in this next week an episode recap of episodes 2 and 3. It's been 3 days since episode 2 came out, and I haven't watched it yet, so that kind of conveys what my enthusiasm level is for House of the Dragon, but who knows, maybe I'll come along a little.
Well, episode 2, I'm back in, baby.
All right, fantastic. Okay. And we'll probably see a glorious return of Superfan Megan and Ashley Keller as well in this next episode. So something for all the longtime fans to look forward to. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
See ya.
Have a good night.